the last word
with Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.
Now it's time for the last word on the environment, and John Gibbons is back with us. John, we do have lots to talk about, but I want to start with the news that came out yesterday evening from the government that they are going to go ahead and ban scrambler bikes, and they are also going to make sure that people have to wear helmets and high-vis clothing. What do you make of it?
Yeah, I think first of all, the scrambler bike ban, it was there already, Ian, but they're sort of saying now we'll definitely do it this time. So it's been on the books. It's more about enforcement. So that's the first thing to say about the scrambler ban, but I don't think any reasonable person thinks that they should be allowed to buzz around in the uncontrolled, dangerous way that they have been. So that's the first thing. What I find kind of disturbing about this is they seem to have sort of snuck in a few other ideas in along with the scrambler, which I think has strong public support. But I think the public would be a lot more ambiguous about plans, for example, to make it mandatory for users of e-bikes and e-scooters to wear helmets and high-vis clothing, right? Now, the issue really here is about who are we protecting from whom, right? The greatest risk to the road users are people in vehicles. That's the statistically, that is overwhelming. Yet 30 to 40% of the people killed on our roads are road users who are not in vehicles. So I would have thought the purpose of the Road Safety Authority and the government would be to look after the most vulnerable road users. Now, you do not necessarily make a road user safer by wrapping them in high-vis. We know this because, for example, vehicles like police vehicles, which have high-vis markings, they get run into by drivers who are looking at their phones and so on. So the big issue really, Ian, is what are we trying to do here? I mean, okay, let's say, for example, that we bring in a regulation that says that all e-bike users must wear helmets. The first thing that will do, of course, is it will kill the public e-bikes network because people are not going to carry around a helmet.
Why not? Why not? Because we have seen an increase in people being hit. So why not? People, it's a simple thing to carry. If you're using one of these services regularly, put it in your backpack.
Sure, nice idea. Okay, but let's just imagine for a moment that the real purpose here was public safety. Let's just pretend that the purpose here was to have a safer shared public space. What is the single thing that all the expert groups say that would make an absolute tangible
difference? Have a separate bike lane. That's from the heart.
Bike lanes for sure, but that isn't possible everywhere. The number one thing which we were supposed to be guaranteed and supposed to be delivered by government until it was backed off and backpedaled, if you'll pardon the pun, by this government is the commitment to introduce maximum 30 kilometre speed limits within all our urban areas. As soon as you do that, Ian, you now have, once road users in vehicles have reduced their speeds to safe levels, then suddenly they are able to notice other road users. The issue in most cases in collisions is a lack of attention. Okay, if a cyclist is careless, right, the likelihood is that they're going to hurt themselves. If a motorist makes the same mistake because they're on their phone or they're checking their texts, they may kill or cripple somebody. So it's really about making sure that the most vulnerable road users are protected first. And we do that by introducing mandatory speed limits. We get them down. And by the way, this has been done over and over. Wales, for example, Ian, introduced a 20 mile an hour, which is roughly a 30 kilometre speed limit on a phase basis. And it has reduced collisions and injuries dramatically. So we know this stuff works.
Is he serious? We need people on bikes to be seen and to have head protection. This is common sense. And I have to say, John, I agree with that text.
Okay. Well, if let's look at where cycling actually works. And let's take Holland as a case in point. And by the way, in case people think that the Dutch have always cycled, 50 years ago, Dutch cities were choked with traffic. Then there was a strong movement to basically give space for active travel, specifically cycling. What you find today in Holland is nobody wears helmets. And you know why? Because they don't need to.
Because they don't have the car culture that we have, and we're not going to change
the Dutch changed their car culture. They said it's not acceptable for people to drive everywhere. And also, when you're sharing the road with vulnerable road users, whether they're pedestrians or whether they're cyclists, that the first thing to do to make our cities and towns and villages safer is to slow down traffic. But of course, politicians don't like
doing that. As a nurse in ITU who has cared for many patients who have sustained severe traumatic brain injuries, they must wear a helmet. Completely agree with reducing speed limits, though.
Okay, most head injuries in traffic accidents happen to people in cars, statistically. So does that person who made that comment think that car drivers and passengers should also wear helmets? If the number one source of head injuries for vehicular collisions on our roads happens to people inside cars, does anybody for a moment think that we should all wear helmets in cars?
I agree with road speeds, etc., but we need to see road users, no matter what the speed, rural areas, no lights, everyone needs to take care. And I think high-vis would certainly work down in rural Ireland.
Again, the high-vis thing passes the onus of responsibility from the car user or the truck driver, whatever it is, the van driver, onto the pedestrian, onto the cyclist. Now, I don't think, by the way, if I was, you know, cycling, I don't cycle very often because I find it too scary. But if I were cycling, I would certainly have a light. And I might use a helmet, but I, for example, would rent Dublin bikes. And unlike you, Ian, I don't carry a helmet around with me.
Why not?
Because I don't. Because
why not?
Because I might be in town.
Shouldn't the onus be on you to do everything you can to increase the your own safety and for other people as well?
Well, should I carry shin guards as well? And should I wrap myself in cotton wool in case I get knocked off the bike?
Well, I agree with this.
I'd rather safer streets, Ian,
another,
to be honest.
Another text in. While I agree with the speed reductions, the biggest danger is young kids dressed all in black with no awareness of road safety. Get helmets and high vis and lights on them.
Again, I'm totally in favour of better visibility, but the issue here is distracted drivers and speeding and running red lights. If we, for example, we're supposed to be finally bringing in pilots after all these years of cameras to simply detect people running red lights, and they're doing this in cars. And I make the point again, Ian, if you make a mistake on a bike or an e-scooter, it's mostly your neck. The odd time you'll hit a pedestrian, but mostly your neck. And as you know, the economists will tell you that there's a moral hazard involved in this, that as a cyclist, you know, if you're careless, you're risking your own life. If as a car driver, you're careless, you're risking somebody else's life. And we all know that people are far better at risking other people's necks than they are their
30 own. 30-kilometre speed limit does nothing to help me as a driver see the cyclist dressed all in black with no lights, or the pedestrian dressed from head to toe in black.
Well, I disagree with that driver. Slowing down, and I agree with him, by the way, that we people should be illuminated, but the driver who's driving slowly and paying attention and staying off their phone is far more likely to see the pedestrian. And by the way, should we also force pedestrians to dress from head to toe in high-vis as well, Ian? Because pedestrians step onto the road. Should they be in high-vis?
I run fairly early in the morning in South Dublin, and yesterday morning when I was running, I had on a yellow high-vis t-shirt. Okay. So yes, you could see me.
So should we all be dressed like council workers everywhere we go? Just wrap everybody from head to toe in high-vis on the off chance that some driver somewhere is on their phone again.
I, as a car driver, am required to have lights on when driving in poor weather at night. Why shouldn't cyclists, etc., be required to be seen also? It's why we have DLR lights nowadays.
Yeah, I think, again, of course, drivers should have lights. They're required by law to do it. But it comes down again, if you're responsible, if you're on a bicycle, you know, you're propelling a 10-kilogram vehicle and you're exposed to the elements. If you're in a car, you're propelling in a 1.5-ton vehicle at high speeds. The onus is on you to not kill other people with your vehicle. The onus, we really should look at this from the point of view of safety. Imagine that was your kid on the road.
John, and the reason I always say these things is, look, what harm would it actually do? As you said, okay, we can take it as fact that more people will be hit by cars. That is statistically the fact. But what harm would it do if it stopped a death or an injury to people, particularly children? What harm would it do?
Agreed. In the same way, Ian, I could reverse the question and say, what harm would it do to have a 30-kilometre enforced speed limits? And what harm would it do to have cameras?
But why can't we have both? Why can't we have both?
Absolutely. But let's, again, look at the hierarchy of danger. You start with the most dangerous vehicles. The most dangerous vehicles on our roads are the big metal boxes that move quickly. Now, small bikes and e-scooters, as I say, they mostly represent a danger to the users. Now, that doesn't mean I condone cyclists for running red lights or for not having lights on. That's kind of stupid. But by and large, they're risking their own necks mostly. And the problem for car drivers is when you're in a car, you tend to see things from inside the car. You're distracted with all your screens, whether it's the screens in front of you, whether it's the phone in your hand. And also you're insulated from the weather. Like in the current weather, I mean, you know, as a car driver, it might be frustrating you're slowed down, but you're not out in the elements. You're not in a good position to judge just how wet or slippery the conditions are. And I would say as a pedestrian like yourself or a cyclist, when you're out in the weather, you really do get a sense of it. And what I don't see is motorists, I guess, adjusting their behaviour because they're insulated from it, Ian, when you're in behind your nice cozy screen.
Yeah, and again, we should have more enforcement of people than make sure that people who are caught on their phone or the screens are given 6 penalty points, not the 2 or 3 they currently get. I have no problem with that, John, but you are absolutely wrong on this. You are completely and utterly wrong on this. And I could go on, but there are other things we want to talk about. And do keep your comments coming in, 0874100102, because there has been a very significant court case, which a lot of people are taking as granted that this means that the climate action bill means that people like you, John, will get all your own way and people like me that want development don't.
Yeah, I guess, well, first of all, a little bit of context on this. This arose from a case in 2023 when Statkraft, who were a wind farm development company, they were refused planning permission in County Laois for a wind farm. And they made the argument to the High Court that under the 2021 Climate Action and Low Carbon Act, that the local authority should have taken into account the need for climate action, and that renewable energy is part of that. And the judge, Richard Humphreys, came out very strongly in their favour, made a very strong declaration, and he was also very hard on both the local authority and Bord Pleanála, as they were known back then, before they became Comisiún Pleanála. And he said, for example, that he said the Climate Act imposes, quote, sweeping obligations across the public sector from the government down. Now, that was the High Court back in 23. Now, we always knew, Ian, that this would be appealed because it was quite a radical judgment, and he went out in a bit of a limb. So we've had the 7 judges of the Supreme Court have ruled on it this week. And essentially, number one, they've upheld the decision. In other words, that the wind farm can go ahead. But they sort of dialed it back a bit. They sort of clipped Judge Humphrey's wings a little bit. And they said, yes, we should, of course, take account of the 2021 Low Carbon Act. Yes, we should. But we're not saying that it is a blank check for every development that is pro-climate, goes. They said it isn't a traffic light system that you get a green light for everything automatically. But they're saying, yes, local authorities and yes, Comisiún
Pleanála,
they have to take it into account. But it isn't, as maybe the High Court judge suggested, it isn't an automatic green light. But it's certainly strongly indicative that the courts, all the way to the Supreme Court, are saying that government bodies, local authorities and our planning authorities need to be far more cognizant of our national direction on this, Ian. So it's a very positive development for climate action in Ireland.
It would, which would be great for getting renewable energy built all across the country, but maybe not for other things like data centres and various other...
You're absolutely right. I mean, if you want to build a data centre or maybe put in a 900 million LNG plant, that should have obviously, that the rule needs to be run over that. I mean, to say, how does, for example, building a gigantic LNG plant, how does that affect our climate obligations? And the question, of course, is if that is scrutinised with that filter applied, you'll find that a lot of these decisions, including data centres, may well fall at that particular hurdle. So I think it's a good day. And certainly the environmental NGOs who've been active in this area, they said, for example, Friends of the Earth said, this judgment clearly reinforces the importance of the national climate objective and that Section 15 of the Act has to be applied by public bodies in a real way. So I think it's a good day, Ian.
Okay, John Gibbons, we're going to have to leave it there. And of course, once again, you have set off our texters. But no more time for John on that. But thank you very much for coming in.
The last word. With Life Pharmacy. Over 100 local pharmacies nationwide that are always here to help. Life Pharmacy. Live better together.